This is CliffCentral.com.
The Burning Platform is brought to you by Nando's. Every week we check in on the important stories, the things that are affecting our society and politics in South Africa, and we've got loads of news to get through today. Good morning, Justice. How are you?
All good. How are you guys?
Good. Good. I've been reading a lot of your stuff lately. You've been writing up a storm. There's such a plethora of stuff to choose from, right?
Ooh, that's so much. That's too much.
So, Justice, can we start off with something that I think a lot of South Africans are very disturbed by, even though we might have known it in the back of our minds? And things are not looking any brighter for these people, but they say half of us are living under the poverty line.
Yeah, I mean, I think can I just say, first of all, guys, I've missed you so much.
Yeah, we missed you too.
I hope so.
We know you had to go and do assassinations, because that's what you do in your spare time.
I wish. Maybe I do assassinations in KwaZulu-Natal, where that they eat you up afterwards.
There are two provinces where assassinations are very rife. The first is KZN, and the other one's Mpumalanga.
Yeah.
And you were in KZN, and I was in Mpumalanga. We're not saying anything.
We eat our kale. Anyway. Yeah, we all talk about politics and all the stuff that's happening, and I think it's very important to continue to talk about that stuff. But what always stands out for me is when Padile Hotla stands up and gives us a snapshot of our country and uses numbers to do that. This week he announced the report measuring poverty trends between 2006 and 2015. I'll read you something here from what the report said, and I think it's worth really stopping and saying what's going on in this country. Mm-hmm. It showed that in 2015, a quarter of the population, 13.8 million people, were living in extreme poverty and below the food poverty line of 17.48 per person a day. That means that there are people who, on a daily basis, don't have enough money to buy food for that day. They go hungry. More than half the population, about 30.4 million people, were found to be living below the upper bound poverty line. That's the number you were quoting. Basically, people who are below the poverty line. This is the line made up of people who can buy adequate levels of food and non-food items but are still considered poor. This is the one I find very, very interesting for our political times and for our debates, perhaps in the run-up to the 2019 election. Poverty decreased between 2006 and 2011, but then increased again. This was when the financial health of households declined under the weight of economic pressure. More households and individuals went into poverty.
So what happened in 2011?
I'll come next, but listen to this. The past 5 years, notably between 2011 and 2015, have been a rough economic roller coaster driven by a combination of international and domestic factors, such as low economic growth, continuing high unemployment levels, low commodity prices, higher consumer prices, and lower investment levels, greater household dependency on credit, and policy uncertainty. So I think there's something interesting here. So poverty was declining, and you could see all the numbers going down in 2006, 2007, 2008. 2009. Now, I don't want people to start on me and start saying, yeah, Justice, you're starting now. But in 2009, we had a seismic event in South Africa. Kgalema Motlanthe stepped down. 2009, President Zuma took over. 2 years later, you see the poverty trend suddenly going back, getting higher and higher and higher. And now you have 30 million people living in poverty. I think it's worth saying, what about political management? Because what the report cites there, the global economic environment, which hit everyone, okay? But then think about what it says about domestic factors,
yeah.
Low economic growth, Now, economic growth was fantastic under Thabo Mbeki and Trevor Manuel. Mm-hmm. Along comes the Jacob Zuma administration. Where are we now? Maybe 0.5% economic growth this year. High unemployment levels. Now, in 2008, we were at 20% unemployment. Where are we today? 27.7%. Low commodity prices. Jacob Zuma cannot be blamed for low commodity prices. High consumer prices, he can always be blamed for that, but we can have a discussion. Greater household dependency on credit.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, people saying, oh, it's tough, let me go to the local Mashonisa and so forth and so forth. And finally, policy uncertainty. Policy uncertainty is when you don't know, and you're a mining investor, you don't know whether next week your mine might belong to the Gupta family or it might belong to someone else. So you don't invest, and therefore you don't create jobs, and therefore you go to a mining community somewhere in the Free State or in Kimberley and so forth, and the mines are just standing there because people are saying, oh, no, should I put money there when I don't know what's going to happen next year?
And,
I'll wait.
And Ms. Benzi's one is mining charter recently didn't help either.
That is the heart of political uncertainty. So for me, there are lots of stories, but I think this one is worth keeping an eye on. Our people are becoming poorer. Mm. Our people are living in poverty, and there are massive, massive implications for that.
And as you say, 2011 is when it all started reverting back to an upward trend in poverty, a downward trend in household income and dependency on credit and all of that stuff.
Exactly. So I think we need to watch it. You know, we always think that stuff is far away from us, but it's not that far. People are poor. People are unemployed. People begin to lose hope. And then people sit there and say, did you hear what happened with Grace Mugabe? Did you hear what the Guptas did? And what is created is a sense of us and them. Mm-hmm. We, the poor, we don't get anything. And if I steal something, the law will come down hard on me. But when it's, so-and-so stealing right at the top, it's a whole different story. So I think this story is, this report is something that we all should be keeping an eye on. Certainly our politicians should be thinking a little bit harder
now,
about that.
Now that brings us to the politicians themselves. We heard yesterday a shock revelation by someone in the DA that produced some secret cabinet minutes about how the government is thinking of sending a large chunk of Telkom to the Mashonisas.
Yes.
So they can pay for SAA.
Yeah. Can I just say, so there are a couple of guys, you know, people like to say, yeah, we don't talk enough about the people who do good things. There are two guys, Sipho Maseko, I think he's the CEO of Telkom at the moment. Jabu Mabuza, who's the chair of Telkom.
Telkom, by the way, has turned around very nicely.
Exactly. Those guys arrived there, okay? I mean, you got to love those guys. Jabu Mabuza is a former taxi owner, and he's this guy. He's just like, he's on top of it, you know? They arrived there. Telkom is losing money hand over fist. It's a terrible business.
They've got huge staff numbers
huge
they don't need.
Staff. They're sitting on all kinds of things, and it's like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? They arrive there. They start fixing the place up. Telkom today, if you walk out of here, walk into Deep Slot, walk into Alexandra Township and say, give me your number. And ask the person, what service are you using? They're using Telkom because they say, hey, it's cheap and so forth. They're turning that business around. They're making profit. They've dealt with historical debt. All sorts of things are happening. These guys have run that business in such an exemplary way that everyone in government should be saying, this is how we want everything we own to be run.
And strategically, Telkom is very important because we know what the ICT sector means for growth.
Exactly.
We know how many small business owners depend on the internet to do their research, their marketing, everything else. If you own the data pipes and if you own the kind of infrastructure that Telkom does, you have such an opportunity to make money.
This is the future.
But instead of betting on the future, they want to sell a piece of the future and they want to bet on this crummy airline which Dudumieni and her crew have run into the ground.
I want him to take a picture of me. And that picture should be of me with this thing. SAA is like this. I wish our viewers, listeners could see this. So that you
what
know,
are you doing to that microphone, Justice? It's very close to your mouth.
Yeah, what's happening there?
And the grip you have on it as
guys,
well. It's
guys,
very.
It's a family show. And the point about SAA is that it just. Its mouth is wide open like this, okay?
Yeah.
And it's just guzzling. It's just like, give me. Every year. Think about it just this year, okay? There was that point when I think it's a UK bank. They owed 2.2 billion. It was like, guy, on Friday it's due pay. They didn't have it. What we had to you guys in here had to take 2.2 billion rand. This is 2 months ago. You had to take 2.2 billion rand. That mabale you should have given to these poor people, given them opportunity, something, and allocated it to that. We gave it quickly. Take SAA so that you could pay Standard Chartered Bank. Well,
right.
Think about it now. Now they want 10 billion. 10 billion. And we are going to take a business that is so good that Jabuma Buza Sipoma Seko have turned around and made a jewel in this country. And we're going to sell that off so that we can give that 10 billion to Dudu Mieni, who has been at Telkom, SAA, sorry, for 10 years. And what have we been doing the past 10 years?
Guzzling money. But guzzling there were two interesting money. Things that happened in Parliament yesterday. One was in the main chamber where this DA revelation of these secret minutes came out, and Malusi Gigaba didn't look very comfortable about it. But he clearly is out of his depth. The guy does not know what to do in this situation. And I mean, to be selling the jewel and to be keeping the old wooden horse is ridiculous. And he doesn't seem to get that. And the other thing that was happening was that in the SAA hearing, where Parliament were asking questions to Dudu Mieni and the people who are still in charge at SAA, their question was, where is all the money? And the acting CEO, did you see what he said? He said, there is no money. Now, how can you be 10 billion in down the drain and not know where the money is? There's such thievery going on over there. It's mind-boggling, Justice.
Guys, can I just say, I mean, I fly around a bit and I use SAA a lot and the other airlines. What I find amazing is that the other airlines are never really always full. But SAA is always full. It's full, you know, where the rich people at front, the poor people at the back, it's full. It's chocker. So something, SAA is not a bad business because the money's coming in, okay? And it's not a low-cost airline. So the money's coming in and people are paying top dollar to be on SAA.
So where's the money going?
This is the question. So there must be something with a cost base at SAA. Now, I'm not an accountant and I'm not an MBA guy, but these are basics. If you are wildly popular, okay, take Ben. Ben is wildly popular. Everyone loves him. Everyone wants to be around Ben. But Ben is in his limousine, is popping, you know, expensive champagne, going to like expensive clubs, and you see what he's doing. He's living like an emperor somewhere who is not looking at, is what I'm spending as much or matching what I'm.
But that would be something. I mean, neither of us are MBA students, but if you're spending as much as you're bringing in, you're still breaking even. They're in the hole for 10 billion. Now, how many planes could you buy for 10 billion? It's a lot of planes.
So
what is happening here? This is a profitable enterprise.
So, you know, this is what I say to my kids. Don't live beyond your means. Mm-hmm. This is your money. Spend your money. Don't go and spend now wanting to spend my money, other people's money. You can't.
Yeah, it's not just poor people in South Africa who live off credit. It seems the rich are as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, I think that's the tragedy of what we're going through. We're going to take 10 billion rand, and we're going to give it to SAA. Let's be straight about it. Basically, we are saying we're going to take 10 billion rand that could go to those people living below the poverty line. We're going to pour it down the drain because the experience of South Africans and SAA these past 23 years is that its mouth is open and your money just keeps on going into this big, big maw, and you don't know where it's never going to come back. It's never going to come back. So we're going to do two terrible things. Sell off Telkom, which is now finally coming to the party, and take the money that we make of that and give it to...
like the crippled, broken, leaking, creaking cart that is SAA.
And by the way, I see Dudu Mieni still around. She was in Parliament.
I thought that she'd resigned. Is she not meant to be gone by the end of this month?
Well, it was supposed to be that one year extension that Pravin Gordhan was forced to give her last year is over and done with. But she was looking very
I hate
morose.
To do this. Can I be very controversial? And you know when I say that, I'm not messing around. It's Women's Month, all right? It's Women's Month. And in government... we have so little in terms of what women are doing in government to be proud of that if I were a woman, I'd say right now, just scrap this Women's Month thing because we're not getting it right. We've got Dudu Mieni, who's not in government, but who's running SAA badly. We've got Faith Mutambi. We've got Maiti Nkwanamashabane. We've got Nomvula Mokonyane, who seems to not be able to run her department either. We've got Batabile Dlamini. It seems to me that actually, on balance, the women in government, in cabinet in particular, are doing a much worse job than the men.
No.
Okay, name one who's good.
No, everyone
is taking instructions from who?
Thank you, the men and the women, all of them are taking instructions from that guy.
Then let's stop pretending that we are all about women empowerment.
But we are. We the people. Those are the first three words of our constitution. We the people. Let's not allow a bad apple at the top to start defining who we are. We know that the men.
So these women are a front.
Yes, but we've known this for a long time.
No, I know, but then let's at least acknowledge, because sometimes we say this is an achievement of our great democracy that we have so many women in government.
But when we say that, we count among them Dr. Makosi Khoza, who has been exemplary.
She's not there anymore. They're getting rid of her wherever they can. I'm saying there was
it doesn't stop us from knowing that she's exemplary.
What a disappointment is all that I'm saying. From a country that was heading in the right direction with people like Makosi Khoza before her, Thuli Madonsela, we have great and exemplary women. What I'm saying is the quality...
I think you've just run out of exemplary people.
The quality of the women that we have in government now should be interrogated. And I don't think they represent women very well. That's all I'm saying.
No, but I mean, I think Mabala's point is absolutely the right one here. Think about Batabile Dlamini. Batabile Dlamini is so useless at her job. She was told by the Constitutional Court, this is what you're going to do. She couldn't do it. They had to go and hold her hand and say, this is how you sign the deal to pay 17 million poor people who expect grants from you. Okay, it's your job. It's not your money. Do it. And she's still in power. And you know what she's doing now? She's running across the country trying to give us the next president of South Africa. Mm. Now, you know, this we know.
Who, again, is a not particularly exemplary woman. I think I may be onto something. I'm just saying.
I hear you, but, you know...
But why are you singling out the women?
No. Because
it's the entire administration.
Okay. Because on the news last night, Nomvula Mokonyane was followed by Maiti Nkwanamashabane, was followed by a story about Grace Mugabe, was followed by a story.
She's not one of us. No, she might be from Benoni. No. She's not one of us.
She's from Benoni.
She's not one of us.
All right.
We can't claim exports.
And we don't have to. We don't even have to refer to idiots like Mduduzi Manana. And other men who have disgraced themselves, because we expect that from men. What I'm saying is that in Women's Month, where there's so much focus on those women who do deserve to be focused on, we have this underachieving lot who are doing nothing for women empowerment in government.
You know, Gareth, I hear you. Okay, I hear you. Certainly.
All right.
And
we can
and
move on.
Wait. I also want to say, let us take this opportunity of this month to also focus on that. That actually, you're right. These people have done the whole struggle for gender equity, for emancipation. They've done it so much damage.
This is it. I'm not saying because they're women they're doing badly.
Yeah.
I'm saying that they are a bad example of the women of this country.
Exactly.
All right.
They are not, these are not our people.
But while we're talking about fronts, please can we talk about our good friend Mzwane Lemani.
Yes.
Who's now a high-powered businessman who, according to the paper money, is worth some 430 million or certainly can make that kind of an investment in a business which you and I wouldn't buy for 5 rand.
I have to tell you guys, the reason why I'm in my suit and tie today, I just came to say goodbye.
You're going to ANN 7.
Because, you know, on air, on Monday evening, Mzwane Lemani comes to my TV show and he's, I like that expression, cock-a-hoop. Yes. He's cock-a-hoop.
What does that mean?
What?
I don't know.
He's clicking his heels in the air.
He's happy and he's positive. He's like, oh, baby, I'm in. I'm there. I'm the man. You know, like,
yeah.
He's doing the moves, you know. It's a weird expression. Anyway,
he's
cock-a-hoop.
Okay, so he was on your show on Monday?
Yeah.
What did he have to say for himself?
So he walks in and he says, justice, we are going to, this is a revolution in South African media, and we're going to take ANN 7 to a higher plane, which I think is not hard work because, you know, where it is right now.
When you hit rock bottom, you can only go up.
Anyway, so he says then, so first of all, he says, justice, I'm going to double your salary and I'm going to rehabilitate you. So, you know, come over, boy, and work. So, yeah,
okay,
it's
well,
be great.
I'm sorry to hear that, justice. It was nice knowing you. That's the end of the burning platform, everybody.
Great innings.
I think justice's credibility just went down to good rockers. Okay, but seriously, what does this deal mean?
What this deal, you know, I mean, I think we need to take our freedom and freedom to express ourselves very seriously in this country. And that when we see bullshit, we must call it out. Now,
I think that's the first time I've heard you swear.
No, I'm sorry. This is so... What has happened over the past 3 days with these Gupta deals where suddenly Jimmy Mzwane Lemani with his company Lodi Docs, okay, suddenly a shelf company, you know, there's a
Lodi Docs.
You guys must go to Centen, okay? There's a little business there. You just walk in and say, here's my ID, da da da, and you buy a company just like that, and then you go and start saying, I'm a big businessman.
Yeah.
So he starts his company, he buys his shelf company, boom. And we are made to believe that he's bought ANN7 and the New Age for 450 million rand. First of all, wow, that's amazing. Now, first of all, vendor financing is when the owner takes his money and says, I'm giving you my money so that you can buy my business from me. And then, you know.
I'm giving you my money so you can buy my business from me. So you're paying for it twice.
Kinda.
How do you stay in business?
So that's the first thing. So they're giving him the cash. They're loaning him the money so that he can buy it. Now, the thing we know about Jimmy is that he has been consistently the Gupta play singer the past few years. Mm-hmm. In fact, for the past 5 years. We know also that he, when he wanted to be on the board of Transnet, he sent his CV to Ashu Chawla, the CEO of Ogbe. Not Ogbe, but the Gupta businesses, several.
The Shabin and Saxon World.
Yes. And said, here's my CV as discussed with Tony. Let's get me on that board. So we know that he is in there with these guys. He's He's part of the...
He's prepared to be used.
He's prepared to be used. And he is being used. So do not even say that ANN7 and the New Age are owned by Mzwane Lemanyi. They are not, and they will not be. This is a fake...
But Justice, this is a major black-owned media company now for the first time.
Their headquarters are in Soweto.
Yes, at Jimmy's home, his old childhood home. Lodi dogs.
Lodi dogs.
I'm
cocker hoop about this deal. Right. So let me just finish just one thought on this thing. So let's call it what it is. So the Guptas go and say, at the end of August, the Bank of Baroda is the only bank that could touch us, and even they are saying
we don't
Amba.
Want. Yeah.
So
Amba.
From September, they can't. They don't have a bank account. They need someone who can go and say, "Oh, I'm the new owner. Open my bank accounts. Let's get this thing going."
But are the banks so stupid that they would say, "Oh, Jimmy, of course, you're a totally different person. Let's give it to you."
Well, you know, they're going to have to go through the hoops of.
I'm amazed. First of all, that there's a clearinghouse sale going on at Saxon World Tribune at the moment. They're selling Tegeta, they're selling New Age, NN7. All of these companies are being. It's a sale. It's the sale of the century going on over there.
Going once.
But
going
the Guptas by. Have only made 1 million rand a year each.
Exactly.
All three of the brothers have only made mubs 1 million rand. And we keep talking about how rich they are. We must be wrong.
Guys, can we do something, please? Please, can we find Sean? Please?
Sean the Sheep?
Sean Abrahams.
Yes.
He has been quiet.
No, but what's going on here? So these guys were earning 1 million rand each.
That's all.
A year. That's it. But they have private jets. Have you jogged past the Gupta house in Saxon Hall? Which is what many of us now do. I'm going jogging, see how it's going over there.
How's it going over there?
Oh, you know, Jacob Zuma's still visiting, so it's all good. I say this because I've seen his 17-18 car motorcade there quite frequently, so I think it's still all good. Power is still in the hands of the family. So we are supposed to believe that someone, a family of three top guys, making 3 million rand, living an incredibly sumptuous life, that's what they earn. And it means, once again, they were tax dodging. But let's not forget that they got given a 70 million rand refund by the Revenue Service just 2.5 months ago. So if you think they're going to be audited, you'd say, "Hey, Baba, how do you have all these things when you only earn 1 million rand a year?" I don't think it's going to happen. It's a big problem.
Though. Sean is on the line. Sean, go ahead. Is there anything else you'd like to say? All right. Thank you, Sean. Thank you. That's Sean Abrahams, everybody. All right, we mentioned her briefly just a moment ago, but Grace Mugabe, and you said there's this rule for them and there's a rule for us. Two different kinds of rules of law.
Yeah, it's a bit like some of the characters you mentioned when you made your point about August and Women's Month. You know, we need to be careful here. Grace Mugabe, if you read the stories of actually what happened at that hotel, now, these two young men are not babies. They've checked themselves into a hotel. They are having fun with whoever they're having fun with. Now, if you're their dad and you can sort of rouse yourself out of bed, given that you're so tired all the time, or if you're their mother and you say, "Guys, behave," you can arrive. I can arrive here and my daughter or my son is here and I want to beat up the people who are having a party. I have to go to my daughters and kids and say, it's time to go home, curfew, whatever it is I'm there about. But she arrives and beats up people in a private property in South Africa, causes a diplomatic stink, and then gets on a jet plane and goes back home to Zimbabwe to laugh at us, basically. And you think about that, and you think about what we've just discussed, the Gupta family and the many, many transgressions, whether it's, oh, I need a passport, and then there's a Minister of Home Affairs, yeah, you become naturalized now, okay, go and take part in BEE deals, or all the things that happen, and nothing, the law is not seen to be working. Think about, there was a moment in the Mtutuzi Manana case where Mtutuzi Manana could have been a normal human being. He should have walked in like every person charged with a crime through the front door of the court. And he, at the Randburg Magistrates Court, got the nice treatment, went in through the back door.
Which ironically is exactly what that woman at Cubana accused him of doing in his private time.
By the way, that's the other thing. Can I just say, when did it start in this country that being gay
is bad?
Is bad. Yeah. So this is the minister, a deputy minister of a government that has been a leader on these issues. And he beats up someone because they allegedly said he's gay. He should have given her a hug and said, "My sister, yes, of course."
Or, if I'm not, that's okay. Why do you not like gay
people? Why do you not like gay people? What's your problem?
Exactly.
What with this guy? I mean, actually, he should actually be kicked out. Those are not values of the ANC. Anyway. So you look at the treatment of all these special people, and the list just keeps on getting on. Think about what happened with Omar al-Bashir, and how he came here, and we have laws that say arrest this man, and there, got on his jet plane, protected by South Africa, and he left.
Even the Guptas landing at that same airport.
Exactly. And they are fine. And in fact, remember that the person, his name is something Kolwane, he became our ambassador to Sweden.
He was the one who supposedly took the blame for that whole Watercliff Gupta airport.
Yes. So his punishment was to become ambassador.
Which is a great job.
It's a fantastic job. He's the same one who appears in the Gupta leaks, by the way, saying, "I need sponsorship for my 50th birthday, 50th or something, for my 50th birthday. Can you send me some cash, please?" Now, you know, if at that age you're still asking people for money for your birthday party, really. Anyway, so my thing here is the idea of law and order. If Sia thinks, "Ah, you know what? The law works this way for these guys and this way for me." Slowly, none of us is going to abide by the law because it's not the law anymore. It's a scam to protect the rich and to oppress the poor.
So why should anyone follow
it? Why should I follow it? If I've got cash, I'll buy off Jacob Zuma or the police or the Metro Corp or whoever. And if I'm poor, I'm just going to cause mayhem and hope for the best. Because it's not law. If it was applied equally across the board, then we'd say, yeah. So right now, there's someone beating up a young woman somewhere. But Grace Mugabe got away with it. So why shouldn't they get away with it? We're joking here. It's shocking, actually.
And justice, just finally, because it's worth a little reflection, we're coming to the end of August, and on August the 8th, we had that vote of no confidence. And what does that really mean now with some retrospect?
I think one of the things about August 8th, I'm sure you've talked and talked about this, and the listeners have, I'm sure, participated. The result was 198-177. the ANC didn't manage to get a 50% plus one to defend its president. So if you are going this, if you were to say, "Ooh, let's see this as an example of how the vote might go in 2019, I think the ANC needs to be very careful that it's already a party that's playing in the 50% zone and could be below 50%. And at the elections in 2019, it might find itself going to Julius Malema and saying, "Ah, coalition," or to other people and trying to get coalitions. But over and above that, the big question is why and how does Jacob Zuma continue to be so powerful? How does he continue to win? And I think Jacob Zuma is a strategic genius. Out of those 198 people, MPs, ANC MPs who voted for him, I would say about 100 do support him, do believe that Jacob Zuma is the best thing since sliced bread. He's the messiah. He will save the ANC and the country, and it will all be good. But I think the other 98 or thereabouts are people who have taken gallons of the grape juice that Jacob Zuma has been giving them, and Gwede Mantashe. And it is that if Jacob Zuma goes, the ANC will split. Do you want the ANC to split? This great movement that we have built over 105 years and so forth. So on the morning of August 8th, there was a caucus meeting. Jacob Zuma turned up, Gwede Mantashe. There was a discussion, and the discussion was essentially that, do you want the ANC to break up? And if we get rid of Jacob Zuma, who are we going to make the next nominee of the ANC for president for the interim period? And I think ANC MPs, many ANC MPs who do not want Jacob Zuma in power, actually panicked and said, we are not ready for this, and so voted to keep Jacob Zuma in power. So it's a win for Jacob Zuma, and it's a win for Jacob Zuma because he takes a win, whatever it looks like. And for him, it might be messy, it might be this, but it's a win, and I'm going to walk out of the National Assembly, I'm going to address those ANC members outside, and I'm going to say, you can't beat the ANC. He is still in power because there are many ANC MPs who failed to do what they should be doing, and that is to hold him account and then get rid of him if he is found to be failing. What it means, you started off earlier by talking about that report that the DAMP, Alf Lees, I think is his name, was holding up. Alf Lees was holding up a cabinet document from the cabinet meeting this week. It means that Jacob Zuma's cabinet is as divided as that ANC meeting on August 8th.
It's like the Trump White House just leaking left, right, and center. Yeah.
So imagine, this is a top secret document considered by cabinet, and exactly a day, it's already Sears got it, or someone in the opposition's got it. What you have after August 8th is not a united ANC. We are united behind Jacob Zuma. It's an ANC that made compromises, and many people like Gwede Mantashe, like Jackson Mthembu, are sitting there looking at Jacob Zuma with his witch hunt to get rid of Makosi Khoza and others, Derek Hanekom, Pravin Gordhan, and so forth. And they're sitting there saying, "Oh my word, what have we done? He has used us again to stay in power." And they can't get rid of him anyway until December. So they're stuck with him for the next 4 months. And I'm telling you, Julius Malema, Musima Amani, Tera Lekota are having a great big laugh because every day is just
prizes
more
for them.
Yeah. People.
Every day another couple of voters cross the line.
Yeah.
But the ANC hasn't got much hope in its own future either, because I watched Cyril Ramaphosa yesterday in Parliament, and I've never ever seen someone so stumped, so evasive, so unable to answer a question directly. Despite his articulate attempt most of the time to deal with things, everything was obfuscation and deflection.
That's because he doesn't know how to say, sorry, this question is for the president because I don't know. Yep. Or this question is for the president because I agree with you, whoever you might be, whether it was Alf Lees or there was a woman MP who asked him another a pointed question. I think it was about Grace Mugabe. And he basically wanted to say it's disgusting what happened.
And but every day that this happens to Cyril, he loses face.
He loses face. I think all the...
When is he going to step up? When is he going to... Because he says one thing.
He half steps up and then someone beats up Derek Hanekom and he's not there to stand up. Makosi Khoza. And he fails to stand up when the opportunity is there for him to stand up. So he's still flip flopping and it's a sad reflection on
weakness.
Him. It's major weakness.
But if the ANC thinks it's going to be healthier under him or Gogo Zuma, then they've got another thing coming.
Well, I must say, she did go to Marikana the
she
other
was
day.
Chased out, right?
She didn't even set foot outside her car. It was quite a thing. But if you want to see hypocrisy at work, where has she been for the past 5 years?
Suddenly pitching up at Marikana.
Oh, I'm going to lay wreaths in Marikana. Where was she when the families of those mine workers, more than 200 injured, and the 35 who died.
Just by the way, who in the ANC can set foot in Marikana? Because we know Cyril's not welcome there. We know she's not welcome there.
There's only one person. It's Nosiviwe Mapisa Nqakula, who went there and said, we are sorry. None of the, and this is exactly after the aftermath, Jacob Zuma, Gwadamantashe, none of the ANC leaders has made an effort at the height of this thing and subsequent to that has made an effort to go there. It's actually the ANC. This is a shame and an embarrassment on the ANC. It was their Minister of Police, Nathi Mthethwa. It was their appointee as Commissioner of Police who said, go in there and shoot them. And they did. So, you know, all suddenly, what is Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma doing laying wreaths now 5 years later? I mean, Bafuthu, I mean, hello.
And why didn't anybody in her team advise her that this is a bad move?
It's such a bad move.
Because her campaign is falling apart.
Her campaign is really, well, it's not just falling apart, it's bereft of ideas. I mean, it's just standing up and talking about some nebulous concept developed by Jacob Zuma called radical economic transformation. What, after 10 years in power? What's going on here?
All right. Well, good luck with your new career at ANN7, Justice.
Guys, can we just stop that now? Because someone did ask me seriously, I hear that they've offered you a job. Where can I find the channel? Jeepers, man. Imagine me walking into Midran to work at ANN7.
Yeah, no.
Oh. ANN7. All right. Thank you, Justice.
Save me.
What a way to end it. The Burning Platform, everybody. Brought to you by Nando's, and Nando's celebrating 25 years in the business this year. That's quite something, huh?
Wow.
Yeah, big birthday celebrations. It's a lot of chicken. It's a lot of happy people. and to their credit, they are one of the few brands in this country who are so relevant because whenever anything happens, they've got the best advertising, the best marketing, and the best PR around it, and South Africa loves that. They're cheeky, they're saucy, they're hot like their chicken. We love it. Nando's and The Burning Platform, back next week Thursday with more from Justice Malala.
This is CliffCentral.com.